Here's the second part of the forum held at the Belgrade Community Library on Tuesday, October 24th, 2023. This segment features candidates for the office of Belgrade Municipal Court Judge.
Okay, we will move on to the Municipal Court Judge candidates. Again, each candidate will have 2 minutes to introduce themselves, let us know what their qualifications are, and then why they would like to be elected. I think we'll start to my immediate right with Christopher Gregory.
My name is Judge Gregory. I've been your judge for almost 2 years now. Before that, I was your city prosecutor. I actually helped start the city prosecutor's office here in Belgrade, and I was the first full-time attorney that was actually devoted to Belgrade cases, Belgrade victims, Belgrade crimes. So I helped open that office and was just doing that for about 5 years. Prior to that, I worked for the Gallatin County Attorney's Office as a felony prosecutor. In that time, I focused on mostly violent felonies, sexual assault, rape, attempted murder. I dealt with some serious cases over there. A lot of my most rewarding and toughest cases were actually here in Belgrade. In fact, I think the law enforcement will tell you that of the prosecutors during my age, I was the one most willing to take Belgrade cases all the way and take the toughest cases to the mat. Before that, I was on the on the gangs task force down south. Our focus was on human trafficking, arms trafficking, and murder. Basically, we focused on organized crime within the Gulf area. I focused a lot on human trafficking for minors. It was a really unfortunate job, but it was an important job where, unfortunately, we saw a lot of tragic endings there. And unfortunately, I think we're starting to see some of that trickle into places like Belgrade with social media, where people are recruiting these minors into things like that, convincing them to leave their homes and things like that. And I have a lot of experience with that. I think my calling is to be a judge. As a minor and a child, I was abused by my father, and it was a judge that took me away from my father and protected me. I'd been to the hospital multiple times, and I didn't have a whole lot of hope, and it was a judge that gave me hope by giving me my freedom and actually feeling that I was safe. And because of that, I've always strived to serve my community, be a public servant, and I've focused on that, and I've always strived to be a judge who could make an impact on people's lives like the judge made an impact on mine.
And we'll go Kathleen Brandis, who is our other municipal court judge candidate, and we will have her introduce herself.
Great. Good evening, and thank you all for being here. It is so nice to see so many friendly faces and familiar faces. My name's Katie Brandis, Kathleen Brandis. I'm running against Chris Gregory for the Belgrade Municipal Court Judge. So for my entire legal career, I have been committed to public service. I also am committed to upholding the Constitution and both the state of Montana Constitution and the United States Constitution, and to being fair and impartial, and to following the law. During law school, I was a judicial extern for a U.S. district judge, and I was all these fancy accolades for law school. I was an editor in Law Review. I was a Thomas More Scholar, which means I got a tuition waiver. I graduated near the top of my class and was offered a U.S. federal clerkship position, which is pretty coveted, and only for the top-ranking students. Importantly, I have a lot of experience as a judge. I was the judge of West Yellowstone for almost 13 years. For 16 years, I've been a substitute judge here for three judges. I'm still the substitute judge in Bozeman Municipal Court. I was the modern master for the state of Montana for over 6 years. It goes on and on. I realize how dated I am when I was writing this out. I'm like, wow, she's done a lot. I'm also still involved with being in public service as the state of Montana's legal counsel for the Department of Administration. So I work in Helena now. And on a personal note, I have two amazing children and a husband. Got married in Pony, Montana 28 years ago. And my children are college age, so I'm in a position now where I'm empty nesting. I have one college kid who's in the U.S. Coast Guard Academy, and the other one's at a West Ivy called Claremont McKenna College. So great kids. Thank you.
Thank you both. We will now give them each the question that they were that was prepared in advance and given to them in advance. And the municipal court judge question is, what element of your judicial philosophy sets you apart from your opponent? And we will start with Kathleen on this one.
Sure. So in addition to our obvious physical differences, the most distinct difference between Chris Gregory and me, I think, could be categorized as due process. A vote for me means that you recognize the importance of impartiality. I have never been a prosecutor. I've never been a public defender. I've never been a criminal defense attorney. It's because of this that I'm a pretty neutral person. I'm the youngest of six, raised these kids, and I think I understand how to be fair, how to be judicious, and how. And as I also teach at Montana State University, I forgot to mention that, for about, I don't know, since 2006. But with the students, they often tell me I'm somebody who asks people to get here. And I think as, and they want to, right? They spend every day wanting to be better because I ask that of people. And I think that's a strong quality for this kind of court, because as a court of limited jurisdiction, you're just basically parenting people to not be felons, right? So they're at a juncture, either they're going to go a bad way or they made a mistake, right? And so how do you assess that? And what's the right penalty for that? Because we need recidivism reduction. We need rehabilitation. We need mental health care for those that need it. We need to take care of our children. A lot of these children, it's an opportunity to redirect. So I think the skill I have and the quality I have that's very, very important for this job is asking people to be better and to hold people accountable to be their best every day. Thank you.
Mr. Gregory.
So I don't know that due process differentiates us prosecutors, judges. Everybody has to respect due process. Prosecutors specifically have to take cases. Every case you have to analyze, is this the right case to go forward with? Is there enough? Is this the right thing to do? Is this the wrong thing to do? And if this person's rights have been violated, then as a prosecutor or a judge, you have to get rid of that case. And so every attorney is familiar with due process. The way I would phrase my philosophy, I am not a politician. Judges are not politicians. We are not here to change the law. We're not here to make the law. We're not here to ignore the law. We are here to read, interpret, and enforce the law wherever the law is, okay? And so I am not a politician. No one should want to be a politician. And that's just a general statement. But you shouldn't want to be a judge and a politician, even if you do want to be a politician. And that's important for two reasons, at least. One is you want to come into my courtroom and not feel like the public is influencing what I'm going to do with your case. You want, if you're a mom or a dad, single, hard up for cash, you just get in a fender bender, never had anything done in your life, no traffic tickets, nothing. You come in there and you tell me, I can't afford much of a fine. I want to take responsibility. I did this, but I can't afford this fine, and I can't afford this to follow me and jack up my insurance rates. Do you want me listening to what you're saying and looking at your driving record and your record and who you are and what you're telling me and the facts of this case? Or do you want me looking at what the newspaper is telling me to do, or if the people at the commission are telling me to jack up my rates because I need to earn more? No, you want me looking at the facts of the case. All right, and so that's why it's important to not be a politician. Looks like I'm running out of time, so you guys will have to wait with bated breath for point number two.
All right, we are now again open up for questions from the audience. Uh-huh. Again, each candidate will have 1 minute for their response to your questions. Thank you. You're willing to get us started again. Thank you.
Thank you for running. One of the biggest issues, and this is nationwide, worldwide, but Gallatin County has really been experiencing this, is, in my mind, it's a part mental health, part substance abuse issue. With the fentanyl pouring into the area, cocaine is seeing a rise again. What would you do to help people with that mental health / substance abuse problem, not just throwing them into jail? Thank you.
Who goes first?
I forgot totally. Anybody remember?
I think she went first.
Mr. Gregory's turn to go first. Thank you. I got to start writing it down.
So that's kind of a two-tiered question, what to do about mental health and what to do about the drug crisis. Obviously, those two issues overlap some. The mental health aspect is actually a particularly interesting issue for me because I've been looking into and talking to some people with the Supreme Court and things of that nature about instituting a mental health court, things like that. One problem with the way Montana has things set up right now, if we have someone come in on a misdemeanor that has significant mental health issues, you want to get them treatment. But the problem is, on the misdemeanor level, the city court and the city is paying for their commitment when we send them. And that can be $50,000, $100,000, if not more, for every single person. And that's the problem is, in district court, they have all these procedures in place, and the statute actually says the state will pay for that when you send them there. But on the misdemeanor level, we pay that bill. And so there's a big difference there as far as trying to do that. And I've been on the Justice Council with the county as well. One of the big problems is, for example, Hope House not maintaining a contract with the county. We're sending people to Bozeman Deaconess for mental health, things like that. And it's just not working. And believe me, it hurts everybody on every side. You've got officers who are being attacked by people who can't help themselves. Those officers aren't safe. The people aren't safe that are struggling with this mental health. The other people that they might be a threat to or a harm to or just care about these people are, you know, a harm for this. And so really one of the aspects is getting local involvement, counselors who are willing to either donate their time or do it at a discounted rate or something like that, working with us to establish something like a mental health court, which is something I've been trying to do. I reached out to the state hospital about exceptions, ideas of way to get this, and I've called them 15 times and they don't return any of my calls. And so I've been trying, and my staff have been trying to get that addressed. I apologize, I'm running out of time, so I'm not gonna address the fentanyl. Other than I'll tell you, I am familiar with fentanyl from my years and 13 years as a prosecutor and dealing with drug trafficking. It is a growing problem, and the Drug Task Force needs more reinforcements. They don't have the resources to address this as well. So that's on that type of level as far as getting more funding for law enforcement and these agencies to look into that.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Ms. Brandis.
And you can have 2 minutes. You need more time than that.
Oh, no, all right. Because I would parrot everything that Mr. Gregory just said as well, because it's true. There is a problem, and it's something that actually I've worked on, too, for many years, trying to find solutions. You know, it's the weirdest thing when a prosecutor is like, oh, we're going to refile this in as a felony so they can get the state funding they need, because a misdemeanor versus a felony on your record are two different tracks. So you're like, wow, that's really messed up. You know, you start with a misdemeanor, you end up with a felony just so you can get the mental health care you need. That's not exactly the right process. And also that's, you know, it's a heavy lift for finances, for our public money. When I was in West Yellowstone, where I was a judge there, I got an idea to start a recidivism reduction task force, because I read data about if people learn, no matter what their problems are, if they learn that they belong to a community and they can feel that sense of connection with their place, that they actually are less likely to reoffend by big statistics. So I started my own workshop where I grabbed some pillars of the community and asked them if they would mentor. And then I asked the police, can you identify a local person who has an opportunity, that it has something in them that could be rehabilitated? And let's get this going on our own way and see if we can make I don't want it easy for them. I want them to have hard hurdles. And it was really amazingly successful. you know, like one fellow was teaching ballroom dancing all of a sudden in West Yellowstone, Montana, you know, or, you know, you just didn't know what people's love and skill are, but they came out and they belonged to West and they were better for it. And the police knew who they were, the pillars of our community, willing to volunteer knew who they were, and they were elevated. It was quite a program. And it was all made up, because there's no other solutions. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you.
Do you see our Constitution, the U.S. Constitution and the State of Montana Constitution, as living constitutions, or are they stationary as written?
Do I get that one?
You do.
So that's a great question, and the answer, of course, is politically affiliated for people. I've taught constitutional law maybe 10 times at Montana State, and the most important thing for me is that it's a neutral interpretation for everyone to do themselves. I have a constitution everywhere I go. I read and love it, and I interpret it as it's written. I know that the current state is, it's being strictly construed by our U.S. Supreme Court today. But I'll tell you, this job is not a heavy lift on the constitutional factors, because we're mostly just interpreting state law. It's a misdemeanor court. The maximum penalty is 1 year. And so we're very narrow in our construction, because we're just reading state law. Now, there always could be a question whether that state law is constitutional, and that would be subject to interpretation. But, you know, I remember in law school that penumbras and emanations from the Constitution is how we have our civil liberties, which I value very much. But at the same time, the current Supreme Court's really reading it strictly, and I'm going to follow the law of the land. Doesn't matter what I think, especially for this job.
Thank you, Mr. Gregory.
Before we start, do most people understand the question? I don't. I mean, because I'm not saying people wouldn't, but living document versus does anyone have a question of actually what that means before I address it? Yes, ma'am.
I know what a living document is. That means it's flexible, correct?
Yeah, the general argument is, and it's usually Supreme Court argument, that basically there's a disagreement between is the Supreme Court up for interpretation and growth, and it can be expanded by case law, versus if it doesn't actually say it in the written rule, then it's not part of the Constitution, base in bare bones. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
Thank you.
So is my time starting?
Whenever Patty's ready.
Sorry.
She's in charge of the talk.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
So it's an interesting question too, because as you get longer and longer, it was in my mind a more relevant question, not that your question's irrelevant, but a debate early in the document's history, because at that point in time, there wasn't a whole lot of case law to argue about and things like that. Now, 200-something years down the line, you've got all these different case laws and interpretations, and the general rule is that if the Supreme Court has made this interpretation, you follow that interpretation until it's overturned or there's a conflicting interpretation. Then you read between the conflicts. And so, you know, it's an academic discussion about whether it's a living, breathing document or whether it's just as written, and it's one that scholars like a lot. I think from a day-to-day basis, I agree with Ms. Brandis that we don't get a lot of constitutional arguments, things like that, but we do, especially in the state, and I think you mentioned the state constitution too. We get a number of motions, things filed to dismiss charges, throw charges out, and they're all rooted in what our state constitution it says and what the Supreme Court says as far as that goes. And at our level, we are under the Supreme Court, and so their job is to interpret the state Supreme Court and what it means and says. And I can have my own interpretation of whether they are right or wrong, but it's not my job. I don't have the jurisdiction or the power to say, well, I just disagree with what they said and what they did, so I'm going to ignore it. It's like I said before, we're, in my mind, slaves to the law, but that also happens with jurisdiction and who is the appellate court and who has say over us. And so it's a tiered system of courts. And so I don't know if that fully answers your question, but it's more of an academic versus pragmatic. And my pragmatic answer is that you cannot ignore what the Supreme Court says. And if the Supreme Court doesn't have something on the Constitution, then I read it strictly in what does the Constitution say, because we don't have any interpretation on that yet. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Attorney for the library.
In the pink, do you want to? I'm having a brain fart on your name, sorry.
You're the most soft-spoken attorneys I've ever...
I get that a lot.
I was wondering about your experience and as practicing attorneys. Was that criminal attorney or civil attorney? And I wonder if you get to talk a little bit about that.
Beyond the bench, you mean?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it is my turn?
Yes.
Yeah. I think I went over it. I've got 13 years of experience as a prosecutor. That entails over 60 jury trials, hundreds of judge trials, probably over 500 motions hearings and arguments and motions from the district court level to in Oklahoma. I did the appellate court several times with the gangs task force. In dealing with appellate issues related to search warrants, things like that. I'd estimate, based on talking to people from the gangs task force and crunching the numbers, that as a prosecutor, I've dealt with over 20,000 cases, as probably over 500 victims that I've dealt with on a day-to-day basis, one-on-one. That as a judge, I've already handled over 4,100 cases just in the past 20 months. The volume here in Belgrade is significantly higher than in most of the other states, or most of the other areas of the state, including West Yellowstone. I think the most recent data suggests that their average caseload over the past 12 years was 490 versus we're on pace for almost 2,600 right now, which is almost six times that. But as a prosecutor, I've spent basically full time. It's been my life for 13 years. And as a prosecutor, what the work entails: meeting with victims, making sure they feel heard, preparing child victims particularly, preparing them over and over to feel comfortable in court, trust you. I have long hair in part because I had a victim that was a Thor fan and thought I looked kind of like Thor, but he was really hard to bring out. And I told him, look, I'll grow my hair if you and I can work together to get this case, and he agreed. So I lived up to my end. He lived up to his end. And then a lot of, like I said, trial work, motions, hearings, things like that.
Ms. Brandes.
Yeah, so as a lawyer, I've been in the court pretty much my entire professional life. The only time I wasn't in court as either working for the United States District Court or the state of Montana. I went to private practice because all my court clerk friends said, you have to try it and you'll hate it. So, but then you'll come back. But you have to do that to know. So I was a civil litigator for about 2.5 years. Also my time at the water court, it's still a water master. So you're still sort of you have a judge, quasi-judicial role there. Now with the state of Montana, I mostly do contracts. For example, today alone, I did one $2.6 billion contract, four $300,000 contracts, and one that's not done yet, has to be done before the 1st of November, but it's $500,000. Anything, and I'm in litigation, actually. I represent two clients for the state of Montana. just on the side because they need lawyers to help. So I have a Fish and Wildlife Parks pending case. So it's kind of fun to be back and still working for the state and actually active as a lawyer. It's been quite a ride. I've really enjoyed my time there. It's all public money, so it's kind of frightening, but I'm doing my best, guys, spending it the best we can.
All right. Any more questions for her? Thank you. I couldn't see that far. Good thing you stood up.
What civic organizations or nonprofits have you been an active member of in recent years?
And I think we're starting with Ms. Brandis.
Yeah, so that's a really actually great question. The problem with that is, as a judge, we're not allowed to be... there's a lot of judicial rules. Like, we can't take money for a fundraiser. We can't... if there's any question of impropriety, like, you know, if I volunteered for the Belgrade Library, then there's a question if I was on the bench... whether I'm fair. So we have strict rules about that. That being said, I am involved with some things now that I'm not on the bench as much, just a sub. I'm trying to think of my last big... I mean, when my kids were in school, I was active with soccer. My youngest plays college soccer now, so I was definitely one of those referees on the sideline, you know, offsides, blowing the whistle or whatever, trying to keep up with them. I've been involved with some activities with Big Sky Youth Empowerment, and that's pretty much it. It's pretty hard to do what you're asking, frankly, with the kind of work that we have. Good question, though.
So she's correct in the sense that there are strict codes and rules against what judicial candidates or judges can do as far as joining. For example, a few years ago, last year, they wanted me to do the dunk tank at the Fall Festival, and I actually ran that by the Judicial Ethics Committee, and they said, no, you can't do that. That makes judges look silly. I thought that was silly, and then I was like, oh, have you heard me talk? I mean... So she's not wrong about that aspect of it. I would say that I do participate in the Fall Fest for the Chamber of Commerce every year. I do donate my time to the city when they have organizations and fundraisers and things like that, as far as not taking money or participating in fundraising, but serving food, things like that. When I was a prosecutor, I was very active in the County Attorney Association. So we had a lot of focuses on, like the mayor was talking about, being involved in going to the Capitol and trying to be involved in the implementation of laws and things like that. So in our free time, we would work on things like that. Does people remember when Marcy's Law was a thing? So we were, our association was very active in that. And that was an interesting issue, because our position as an association was twofold. That we already had statutes in place in Montana that saw to a lot of victim input and protections, and there were ways Marcy's Law was written that, in my mind, could be used to manipulate against victims, and that was the main reason I was against it. I wanted it rewritten. And so I was very active in working with the association and donating my time and talking to our legislators and people like that to impact that particular law, for example. Does that answer your question?
All right, thank you. Okay, Elizabeth.
I don't really know how to ask this question, but...
Yes, my hair is real.
We have the busiest airport in the state. We're at the crossroads of I-90 with traffic going down to Big Sky via, you know, the Jackrabbit Highway 191. We know that sex trafficking, we're at a crossroads in the state for things like sex trafficking and just whatever that means. How can a municipal court influence justice when those are much bigger issues and intertransportational issues too. I mean, how would you be able to influence minimizing that traffic in our area and in the state?
Mr. Burley.
I think I'm understanding your question. I think the best example I can say right now, and in my experience, is that yes, it is here. Yes, 90 is a pipeline. They're coming in on the West Coast, and they're using I-90, especially to get them into the Balkans and the oil fields and areas like that. And so they do stop over here. What I will tell you is my experience has been that I am more concerned about the online presence. AI, human traffickers, and I can tell you this from my time on the Gangs Task Force, they will recruit minors and kids who will reach out on Facebook and become these kids' friends, want to be their buddies, and they convince them that your home life isn't right. It's way better here. We're going to send you a bus ticket. My family's going to take care of you, and think, okay, this is going to be better. And then we never see them again. And I can tell you one example is judges have to be very careful to be impartial. But we did have one case, at least in the last year where I was judge, where a very similar and troubling, I saw the pattern from my training and experience. I recognized what was happening. This family had filed an order of protection because these people out of state in Arizona were reaching out trying to get their son to take this bus ticket and leave. And at one point he did, but we caught him before he left. And they were saying, I need an order to stop this. And I recognized what was happening and got law enforcement involved on that level because it was a civil issue on this order. But I recognized that this minor is not only at risk, but maybe you can use these resources. And I'm not involved with law enforcement, but when you see something like that, it's a situation where, in my opinion, you see something, you have to say something. And they're investigating that, as far as I know right now, whether they can develop an investigation to get those people to expose themselves and hopefully identify who those people are. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so that's a great question, because as a court of limited jurisdiction, it's only the city limits of Belgrade. But when Mr. Gregory did mention the Criminal Justice Coordinating Council, so a long time ago when I was the judge of West Yellowstone, I worked with the county attorney. We rewrote all the bylaws. And what that is, it's the panel of all the interested parties of criminal enforcement, like the lawyers, the judges, the leaders, the sheriffs. It's a panel. And then there's an outside panel with mental health and other people. And that group, actually, the county attorney at that time and I rewrote the bylaws to make it such that it's everyone gets a turn. All the judges get a turn, and you do your tenure, and then you can still go to the meetings. But it's there that a lot of great things happen, because at the time, Hope House was brand new. And, you know, a mental health care director for Hope House was like, hey, you know, do you think the police could just not just knock on the door, leave someone, and drive away? Do you think we could, like, check them in, right, and make sure you have room? You know, basic questions, but like having everyone together at the table to talk about the countywide criminal issues that we all share in our different hats was really productive, and I thought a good resource to understand the big picture. But I don't know if it's going to solve the world's problems, but I think it's nice to collaborate. Yeah. Thank you.
Any more questions for our candidates? Okay, each candidate will have 2 minutes to provide us with their closing statement. Did you?
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah, we have time.
So in this position, you've got subordinates, you supervise in the city. How would you handle a situation if a subordinate was believed to have behaved inappropriately, say, for example, rudely to the public?
That's mine first, I think, right?
It is, thank you.
Well, Montana is an interesting state because it's very, thanks to Butte, and the pro-employment laws are very strong here. Once someone's passed their probationary period in Montana, terminating someone's not an easy feat without facing some sort of problem. You know, and as a lawyer, I'm going to follow the law. So the only real thing you can do is, well, in my opinion, is make sure the person who received the bad information understands that this is a training opportunity and we're going to do what we can to fix this in-house. I don't think there's any employee at the city of Belgrade who wakes up every day and says, how can I wholly fail and be an asshole, right? So if you go with that, if you start with that in your mind, that that person made a mistake, and at the same time, documenting is very important because once your file is thick enough, you legally can terminate. But you can't without that file. And Montana is just that way. We're not an at-will state. We're a for-cause state, one of the only states in the country that have that. Good question. Thank you.
So, is it my turn?
Yes, I was. You seem to be going, so I didn't mind.
I do that. So, it's an interesting question in the sense that employees for the court are kind of two-tiered, too, because the judge is the supervisor of the court and the employees, and there are statutes that say that basically the judges have the right to kind of rule their clerks and things like that for the best benefit of the court. And that, according to the case law, has expanded a lot of what you can do. But they're also city employees, and so they are subject to the rules and guidelines of not only state employment laws, but the guidelines and employee handbooks of the city of Belgrade. And so in the city of Belgrade, there are statuses and procedures that you have to follow anytime there's a complaint for that. And so the initial step is that you deal with HR and talking to that person with a verbal warning or give them a chance to explain what happened, if there's other information to be had, and then you make a ruling with HR whether they merit a verbal warning unless it raises to a really concerning extreme level. The next step is a written warning. Usually the city of Belgrade errs on the side of caution and will do a couple of written warnings in my experience. And then you can reach the level of putting them on leave with pay, where you set a review hearing to determine whether the behavior has reached the level of being worthy of termination or not. Usually HR and the city attorney is involved in that process as far as that goes.
Did I miss anyone there? I can't see your hand. All right, now we will give each candidate 2 minutes to do a closing statement. And I forget, I'm going to start with Mr. Burley, right?
I think you let one of them open and one of them close first. Is that, or do you want me to go first? It's really up to you.
I think it would be my turn.
Yeah,
go ahead. I'm easy to let you guys decide.
Thank you all so much for being here. This shows your commitment to your vote, and I think that's the most important part about our democracy in America. I also want to give a personal shout-out, and I forgot my reading glasses. This is the problem of being there. But I want to give a personal shout-out to the Belgrade Community Library Foundation, the Bozeman Public Library, the Bozeman League of Women Voters, the American Association of University Women, and the Bozeman Professional Women. As we all know, and the volunteers who are here, thank you so much, because without you, we can't have this. So especially those who had to call me and be concerned that I would forget. So thank you for that, too. This is such an exciting time because it's your first opportunity to vote for your Belgrade judge. It's never happened before until Belgrade became a municipality. So this is it, right? Into April, you're a city. That's now a municipality. And so this is your first chance to cast that vote. And I'm really proud to be here tonight to have that opportunity to ask for your vote. I have a great temperament for this job. I apply the law as it's written. Those who are guilty can anticipate a sentence to what the law allows. It's not rocket science, this job. It's just more about being a people person and reading people, having that interpretation of whether that what help they need and how they're not going to come back, because you don't want to see them either, right? So how can they succeed in their life? How can they go back to work? How can they get their jail time over with so they can move on and put that behind them and you don't see them again? So I'm sure you got a little bit of a glimpse of who I am. And I know you must understand that I absolutely love the law. I have a huge passion for it. I am very committed to public service. And I just would so appreciate returning to the bench. Thank you so much for this evening. It's been really fun for me. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Gregory.
I'd also like to thank everyone involved with this. I like to talk, so I don't want to spend too much of my 2 minutes, but I am very grateful for everyone that's being here tonight and set this all up. I've been asked by several people, like, what is your argument for voting for you, things like that. It's tricky because judges are non-political, non-partisan parties, and we're not supposed to make any ruling or decision based on are we afraid of voters liking that or not liking it. The best advice I can give you if you're trying to make an educated decision on this is to talk to the people who practice in my courtroom. A lot of them have dealt with Ms. Brandis when she was West Yellowstone too. I will tell you that the chief of police and the police union support me. They would not support me if I was soft on crime. I'll tell you that at least 24 members of the defense bar in Gallatin County threw me a fundraiser, participated, and donated. They would not do that if I wasn't fair and balanced with their clients. I will tell you that the domestic violence response team in Gallatin County reached out to me last week. They had a concern about how to get better counseling for domestic violence abusers because it wasn't working. They said I was the judge they first reached out to because they knew I would take it seriously, I would get something done, and I was the one to work with. I was the first person they reached out to. They would not do that, and they would not say that if I was not a good advocate for victim rights. I have multiple city council people and the mayor putting signs in their yards. They would not do that if they thought that I was a problem for this city, if I was spending from my budget irresponsibly, or if I was a problem for Belgrade. I'm not telling you to vote for me because, oh, all these people are, join the train, I'm bullying you. I'm saying there are a lot of people on this list who have dealt with both of us, and they are advocating for me. There are a lot of people on this list, defense attorneys, the prosecutor, and the police. They have different agendas. They want different things out of my courtroom. They don't agree on hardly anything. But you know what they agree on? They agree on me being the right fit for Belgrade, this court, and for Montana. So thank you.
Okay. On behalf of the event sponsors, which everybody said, but I'm going to repeat it again, the Bozeman Area League of Women Voters, the American Association of University Women, Bozeman Business and Professional Women, the Belgrade Community Library, and the Bozeman Public Library, on behalf of our sponsors, I would like to thank our candidates and all of you for attending tonight. I think we've shown that we're lucky in Belgrade to have this level of candidates to choose from. And that happens because of public engagement, because you guys participate in what's happening and care. And so it is just so important, and we are so thankful for all of you who are participating, our candidates and our audience. If you are not registered to vote, I do want to say that we have two volunteers, Pat and Yvonne, behind her. They're ready to register you to vote tonight, and it only takes a few minutes. And again, so important. I'd like to thank them. And even though I've already thanked them, I'd like to especially thank the Belgrade Community Library. They set it all up. They get the recordings. They get the people to do the mics and all the technology. They provide the snacks. They are great hosts, and we're lucky to have such a wonderful library in Belgrade, too. So I want to thank them. Good night. I think that's all I have. So good night, everyone. And I'm sure our candidates will stick around for a minute if you had questions. I see Brad Cooper's back there. Please ask some questions.
That wraps up the forum held on Tuesday, October 24th, 2023 at the Belgrade Community Library, featuring candidates for Belgrade's mayor and Belgrade Municipal Court Judge.